This audio recording is brought to you by caseygolan.com.au.
Hi there and thanks for listening. This is Casey Golan and this is part one of four parts of an interview that I did with Eddie McElhaney, my client, from Big Commerce. We talk about their growth, how they achieved it, and how they went on to secure $15 million in venture capital. But also, after this recording was completed, they got nominated as a finalist in the BRW 2012 Entrepreneur of the Year Awards, an outstanding achievement for Eddie and Mitch. Enjoy this interview, and if you get any ideas, please write them down, and most importantly, execute them in your business. Let's get started with the first part of the interview. Okay, on the phone right now, we've got Eddie McElhaney from Big Commerce. How are you going, Ed?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Now, of course, we're talking today because you guys in Big Commerce, yourself and Mitch, have achieved some pretty good results. Can you talk about some of the achievements you guys are achieving in your business?
Sure, mate. Like most recently, as you probably know, we got on the Sydney Morning Herald that we raised $15 million of venture capital from a US-based venture capital firm.
Yeah,
so that's pretty exciting.
Good stuff. Now, in the US, of course, they're not going through a good time at the moment with the dollar and how the economic conditions are there. So you must be doing some things right to attract some venture capital from the US.
Yeah, look, I think so. We're running a pretty solid business with a good business model, a good brand in a fast-growing space, and, you know, we were profitable. So we'd actually been turning down venture capital for about 12 months just because we didn't feel like we were ready. And when I say turning down, I mean there were offers on the table, but it was more we were just declining the future conversations. And so that, you know, 12 months since the initial contact with the VC firm that we were talking to, we said, look, we're in an opportunity now to take a leadership position, so we thought we'd jump on that opportunity.
Tell us a little bit about Big Commerce and what does you guys do?
Yeah, Big Commerce is an online e-commerce platform. So we enable small businesses to sell their products online by building their own online store. It's a kind of a do-it-yourself solution. It has, you know, allows you to accept credit cards, design your entire website, publish products, accept orders, process your orders, and everything that a small business needs. And it priced at the small business price of, you know, average between $25 and $100 a month.
Fantastic. What's the difference between you guys and everyone else out there?
Yeah, one of the biggest key things that we focus on is our client success. And one of the things we found early is that a lot of people build online stores but don't know how to drive traffic and business to that online store. So what we tend to focus on is the marketing aspect. While we'll give you the entire solution, you can upload your products, you can accept credit cards, you can design it and everything that you possibly need, we focus very heavily on the marketing components and help you drive traffic to that store. So we let you publish on eBay, through Facebook, we get high rankings on Google because we optimize your store for Google, and you know, we just generally build the tools such as email marketing, so really give you an overall marketing suite to help you be successful online.
Because you can go to a web designer and they can do an e-commerce site for you, but then you've got no idea what to do.
That's exactly right. So we help you provide those tools to help you be successful from day one.
So get in there. There's heaps of templates and tutorial videos on not only setting up your website, so you've got a business, but also, or a potential business, but you also got the SEO, you also got all the marketing little bits and pieces to help people put their business out there so to get them customers.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it works. I've got some clients on it, so it's
good stuff.
Fantastic. And we're going to go talk about you, you know, a bit of your history, your past, and what you're doing now. But just so the listeners can get a bit of an idea of what your growth has been. You know, when did you start? How many years ago did you start? Today's 2011, October 2011. When did you start the business?
Yeah, so the business itself, previously called Interspire, was started in 2003, so late 2003, early 2004.
Okay.
But we only launched the Big Commerce product, which has kind of been the future direction of the company and that business model. We launched that in late 2009, just before we started working with UCase.
Okay, no worries. And what's sort of like, you know, for your Interspire, and now for Big Commerce, what sort of growth? Because I can see on your website, you know, you got things like, you know, 680% growth, and you see you guys have been pretty fast growth.
We have. So the overall company, we grew from roughly around 7 million in 2009-2010 to around the 10 million, and we're on track to do 15 million. But the considerable growth, the interesting part of that story is, while that doesn't sound like huge phenomenal growth, BigCommerce as a product, we had 1 million in revenues in 2009 and quickly jumped, and we're on track to do about $10 to $12 million just on the BigCommerce platform. So that growth has been really significant, and it's been a huge driver for us, because what we initially did was focus on shifting our revenue model from perpetually licensed software to a SaaS revenue business, because it just made so much more sense.
So tell us a little bit about that for the listener. What's the difference?
Yeah, so perpetually licensed software, basically we sell a software package for, and it ranges in terms of price, but roughly around $400, and the end user, the client, owns that software and doesn't really need to pay anything else to continue using that software. They take that software, they own it, and they install it on their own web server, etc. So they also have a technical burden on them or technical responsibility. So generally what that means is you need to be a little bit more technical to use the software, but you only ever pay one price, which is roughly around $400. And then you can pay a 20% maintenance, annual maintenance fee, which means you're paying an extra $80 a year to get support from us. So what the SaaS product and software as a service means, we actually completely manage and host the software for you. So if you're building an online store, you don't have to be technical, you don't have to worry about FTP and MySQL and have to actually own that component. We take care of that for you. In return, you pay a monthly fee, which averages about $25 to $40 a month. So in the end, it actually works out to be the same, if not better, but we provide all the upgrades, etc. And as a business model, for us, it made a lot more sense. One, it was a consistent cash flow. It was monthly. We continue to sell and do the exact same amount in terms of our marketing and sales, but our revenue will consistently increase over time. So that made a lot of sense to us. It also allows us to hire less technical support people, which who didn't need to know, Linux and very detailed hosting environments, because they just needed to really understand the software. And we can consistently push out upgrades to our users automatically, and that goes out consistently, so they're always having the latest version of the software, which makes a lot of sense for our clients.
Awesome. What was the implications on that?
Yeah, so what that did is, there's two things that happened. One, it was kind of a win-win situation, both for our clients and for the business. For the clients, it meant that we managed the entire infrastructure for them. They didn't have to worry about uploading products and files and upgrades and security. We just managed that entire aspect for them and constantly kept the product updated. And in return for a small monthly fee, we can provide them unlimited telephone support, email support, live chat. Anytime they have a problem, they just jump on a call and say, hey, I'm experiencing this issue. And our trained people will help you, through that process and help you become successful. The other thing it did for the business was that recurring revenue in that business model. One, because we controlled the infrastructure, it made it easier to build better software. We didn't have to rely on so many different pieces of software and integrations, etc. We control that entire infrastructure, so we can release software a lot quicker and make the product more stable and more secure. And also, the financial impact meant that we had a recurring revenue model. Now, a recurring revenue model is very powerful, because you don't have to continuously be selling to have revenue. So as long as you keep selling, if you sell one product a month, by the end of the year, you now have 12 customers. If you continue just to sell one product a month and do nothing differently, now you have 24 customers. And so it's this compounding buildup of revenue over time. It also changes the valuation and what people value your company, both on the public markets and the private. And you can typically go from between 1 and 3 times valuation of your business in a software world to something like a 6 to 10 times valuation. If you look at companies like Salesforce, as a public company, they're trading at about a 600 price to earnings. And any stockbrokers out there, financial people, realize that's a phenomenal valuation of that business because of, one, the potential to grow. Your cost of goods are very minimal because you're in software, but you're also in SaaS. And you can actually expand into markets so much quicker, but you're also compounding the revenue that you have. So every year you're becoming more and more profitable.
It's obviously a more attractive model. And sometimes, for some businesses, they're going along all right, but they just don't have the right model. So
right.
Choosing the right model for future growth is a real key.
Yeah, definitely. So a business model is incredibly important. That was kind of the biggest shift for us, is figuring out what that business model is. And there's lots of clues in the world that you can look at to see what's successful in other countries, in other areas. What are people doing? Success leaves clues, as Anthony Robbins like to say. There's a ton of information out there if you just go out and search. What is somebody else similar to me in a similar industry doing and they've become successful? What business model did they follow? And Casey, I just want to make a point that one thing I didn't mention was our profit from 2009 to 2010 actually quadrupled. So while our revenue didn't go up by much, our profit was actually phenomenal in terms of growth.
Because of the business model change?
No, it was a combination of the business model and really figuring out what our financial model was. So really cutting back costs, reducing costs in areas that they didn't need to be, and focusing on increasing our spend where it resulted in, you know, I could figure out exactly which one of our products was now very profitable, or where would I spend more money in terms of marketing and actually just fuel that growth. So being able to do that, really understanding the financial component of the business as well as the business model, really shifted the profitability of the business.
So tell us about where you were at and why you came to me. What were some of the challenges you were facing at that time?
Look, when you go through a transition, initially we came to you, there was a bit of frustration, definitely frustrating the growth of the business. We hadn't seen the growth that Mitch and I had aspired to. You know, we're big thinkers. We saw and we always paid attention to what was going on in the software world, and we saw this huge growth that was coming, that was going on with a lot of our competitors and a lot of different people in the space. So that was kind of one of the things we reached out to you for originally. But also the transition from shifting, you know, BigCommerce had literally just launched. We had under 1,000, you know, clients at the time. It wasn't a huge driver of our business. And so it was really that, you know, figuring out how do we go from one to the other, even if, you know, is that really what we wanted to do? Were we making the right move? Was it the right decision? And we kind of needed somebody to bounce ideas off, but also to kind of strengthen us in our structure and our processes. We had some hiring issues. We weren't hiring the right people that we wanted to at the time. We had some poor management in place, some systems that were broken, didn't really have strong financial understanding in the business. And, you know, that was one of the key reasons for reaching out to you.
Yeah, and that's the financial model ended up being a real big player for one, the growth, but also the securement of the venture capital as well.
It was huge, mate. Yeah, one of the things that I'm a big fan of now is anytime I look at any business or help a friend out or look at a third party business, whether it be from an investment perspective or whatever, is just really understanding the financial and operational model. And I call myself almost an expert, but I'm definitely not an expert, but I can really understand and look at a business from a financial perspective and see what some of the key drivers are. Once we had built the financial model of the business, all the bits and pieces started to make a lot of sense. I started to see where we were overspending, where we've cut costs. I started to see where there is opportunity to invest in the business. But I also could communicate to the venture capitalists and communicate to the different finance people on how we would continue to grow the business. Where would we invest the amount of money that they put in? You know, they've put in $15 million into the business. They're obviously going to look at a return. So I started to understand, you know, the valuation of the business, where we'd invest, the percentage of, you know, cost of goods, reducing that to a certain amount, how that increases your valuation, etc. So understanding the financial model and the operational model of the business was, you know, probably 60% of taking us to that next level.
You know, you're knocking back offers from the venture capitalists, but then when they started knocking on your door and you said, okay, it's time now to investigate this, how did they react with your level of understanding your financial model?
I think when the venture capitalists invest in a business, they're going to invest in the business model, they're going to invest in the opportunity, but more than anything, they're going to invest in the entrepreneurs and the founders of the business. And they were incredibly impressed. One of the things that I keep getting told by Larry, who's our board member now and our investor, is, you know, they can't believe that we did this without a CFO. Hurry up and go find yourself a CFO, because it's not what you should be doing now that, you know, the business is at this size and you've got that much capital to work with. But they were incredibly impressed at the detail, the metric-driven focus that we had, the way we really understood the business from all angles. Because once you understand really both the financial and operational model, you really start to understand every single aspect of the business. You start to understand every dollar that you put into marketing, what that results into revenue, and then you start understanding, you know, how much you need to invest in engineering. But what it also lets you do is there's a ton of public companies, especially in the US, who filed S-1s, which means they filed a document preparing them to go into an IPO. Once you file an S-1, you have to publish your entire financial statement. So now I can go in and look at whether it be competitors or whether it be people in a certain, you know, companies in a similar industry, SaaS-based, et cetera, and I can read their S-1 and I can compare us to them and I can say, well, Now we have a healthier business than these public companies because our cost of goods is lower. We're spending less on engineering, or we should be spending more on marketing. So now I can understand comparatively what a successful company looks like. But then I can also communicate that to a venture capitalist and say, well, our business compared to X, Y, and Z, these five businesses that are public, we're actually doing a much better job at acquiring customers. We're acquiring at a faster rate. Our churn is a lot lower. So really, to answer the question, they're incredibly impressed.
Yeah. So for you, now let's be frank, you would like most people to come to you. You had this business that was growing, but how would you rate your level of understanding of your financials when we first started?
Probably a minus five.
Well, you've always been an overachiever. So, well, and I went through the three different levels of accounting. You remember those three levels? Financial, management, and taxation accounting. And usually in a business, there's financial, and that's usually bookkeeping. Management accounting is usually missed totally in small business. And then you've got the taxation accounting. And most people look towards their accountant as the person that should help them with their management accounting. But the accountant, typically, their role usually is to minimise your tax and help you with the structure of your business. So for a small business, there's no management accounting left in place. It's pretty much extinct in the business. So what I did with you guys and with other clients is start going, okay, let's look at your profit and loss. And can you remember that, Ed? We started reconstructing it and having a look at your cost of sales and then moving things from your expenses. Because when you guys started, you had no cost of sales. Everything was in your expenses.
Right. Everything was in a P&L. I understood a P&L, I understood a balance sheet, but I didn't, as you mentioned, didn't really understand how to manage a business financially. And that was probably the number one thing that we worked on that opened up the doors to a lot of what we were doing. We didn't have things categorized in cost of sales. We didn't look at things from, you know, engineering separate to marketing, separate to finance, separate to admin costs. So we didn't have specific ratios that we can compare. And we really didn't have financials for us was, are we making enough money? Are we paying our bills? And do we have profit at the end of the month?
Yeah, and that's typical. And for someone listening to this, they're going, wow, Eddie, you know, you're just such a high level for this stuff. But, mate, it didn't take you long to get there because, you know, obviously I showed you what you need to do. But once I turn on the lights for you, obviously you've got talent. That's what I look for. I look for someone with talent and put on the lights, and then all of a sudden you can see what it is you need to do. And then once we started getting into some metrics for your business and what the financials meant for that, then you could start budgeting in it. And I can remember when we started budgeting things, and you had, I think it was like 9 months in advance, there was a particular target we wanted to hit in April, which was actually this year, and all of a sudden you had planned it all out. And you knew exactly what the path was that you needed to do to get there. You remember that?
I do, mate. Mitch and I were in a hotel room, actually. It was really cold one night. We had not much to do but work with financial statements. And we were sitting around talking. We jumped on a laptop. And all the stuff that we'd worked on in the past, now we had the tools to do what we wanted to do. And that's what really was about. You know, I didn't think you came in and said, hey guys, you need to be doing X, Y, and Z, and this is what you should be trying to hit in terms of revenue. It was more of a, here's the tools that you guys don't have. Let me help you put those tools into place and run with it. And that's exactly what we did. We put the first kind of operational and financial model, management model, based on financials and metrics for big commerce for us to hit 10,000 customers, 10,000 clients. And we actually hit that. We missed out by maybe 200 stores, 200 paying clients at the time within 12 months. And everything was, we managed the business entirely based on that operational model. It did not change. It was actually freaky how accurate we were. And our team, actually, our staff, our employees, they're so impressed by the vision that we had and how close we were. And that actually became a tool that to inspire our team to say, you know, you're working with some great leaders who really understand their business, really understand what it takes to get to, you know, the next goal. And that's how we're running the business now. We've built operational models. Now I have the luxury of working with, you know, a contract CFO, but I can actually talk to that CFO and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This is what we're trying to get to. Here's what we need to get to the next level of our business. And then we work together to build that model. You know, he still doesn't do it on his own. It's definitely worked with me, but I can also give him these things called what I call key drivers, because now I can look at the financial model and say, well, if I turn up the dial on marketing, and it's a repeatable marketing model. You know, if I spend some extra money on Google AdWords, if I increase my, you know, X campaign, I know that I'm going to need X amount of salespeople, which in turn is going to amount to X amount of support people that I'm going to need, which in turn amounts to X amount of, you know, customers I'm going to have. And it's just a repeatable cycle that continues to continue to grow.
Absolutely. You've got visibility on the future performance of your business. And what I usually find is that most business owners are just, they look in the rear vision mirror of like, and they go to their account and go, how'd I go? Well,
right.
I made profit, but where's my money?
Right.
You know, that's silly. If you're at that level, you've just got to step up to the next level. And it's a great opportunity, you know, to understand your business and then plan it forward. And, you know, for what you guys, part of the skills that you guys have got now is you can, you know, as you said you had X amount of customers at that time, and 12 months down the track, we're going to get to 10,000 customers. You planned it out financially. You knew if you were going to take X action, then the result should be X in terms of financial resources. Like for example, you've got your financial model, what your staffing model need to be, what your resource model need to be to be able to hit that target, but also help that, you know, maintain that target moving forward as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it all, like you said, it all kind of stems from this financial operational model. Now we do have staffing models, so we can hire in advance now, knowing that we're going to need X amount of people. So in the past, I would only hire a person when we actually absolutely desperately needed them. So that means my support queue was, you know, constantly full. We had too many leads, good problem to have, but not enough engineers. Now we can go back and build. We've built a staffing model. We've built a marketing model. And now I can actually KPI my team and put them on KPIs and bonuses that say, well, you're my, you know, CMO, you're my marketing manager, you're my VP of engineering. This is what I'm expecting from you, and this is the amount of people we need to hire, and this is what the results I'm looking for. And if you hit them, then you're going to be compensated accordingly. And that just, it changes everything, because now I don't have to do everything myself. But even though I was in the past, or Mitch and I were doing a lot of stuff ourselves in the past, we had a plan of exactly what we needed to do, what we needed to hire, what return we were looking at in terms of our marketing spend, etc., and in terms of customer acquisition.
Yeah, excellent, mate. Couple of questions for you. Have we ever met in person?
We have not, but I'd like to.
Yeah, we do. We often talk about me coming to Sydney.
That's right.
Now, have I ever seen your business premises, or, you know?
You have not.
And we just worked over, well, we just worked over Skype, really, didn't we?
We did, yes.
And about how often a week do we work?
Once a week. I like to do it on Monday with you so I can spend the rest of my day focusing on the core action items.
Yeah, and on that Monday, how long did it take?
We spent, generally it was an hour or, you know, hour 15, and a few emails back and forth.
Yeah, perfect. And like for a lot of people just go, how can you help someone in a business without, one, A, meeting them, B, seeing their business, and C, just on hour a week? You know, how do you explain that? Having gone through it, because you can understand how people come to me and they go, well, that's kind of, geez, you're paying a lot. And at the time it was $3,000 a month, which ended up being about $780 or something like that an hour. But how do you explain how that works?
But I asked you the exact same question when I first was doing some research. I actually remember the night I was doing a Google search, found you on Google, started reading testimonials, subscribed to your newsletter, etc. And the first question I asked you was, hey, we're a software company. How many software companies have you done in the past? Because most of the testimonials I'd seen were not, you know, technical in nature. And I was like, how much can really Casey help me with, you know, software? Is he really a technical kind of guru? And what I quickly found working with you is you didn't have to be. It was more about the tools. It was more about looking at things from, and I think every business shares some common elements, especially from a financial perspective, from a marketing perspective, sales. There are so many common elements that every business shares, where you're in electricity, whether you're in building, whether you're in marketing or in software, there are so many common elements. And I think a lot of it was you were teaching me, and I mentioned this to you earlier, but you were kind of teaching me to look at the business from a high level and look at it and basically take a step back and look at things that didn't need you to be in premise with me. You didn't need to be sales. You didn't need to know anything about the business. What you did need to know was what did the financials look like? What were we doing that was successful? What wasn't successful? And we were tweaking the things that were successful, looking at some of the tools that we hadn't used in the past and optimizing, and then cutting out what wasn't successful.
For further information, please go to caseygolan.com.au. That's caseygolan.com.au for all your business coaching and business growth products and services.